Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Saints, thanks so much for joining us. It is Tuesday and that means open forum. And open forum means whoever you are and whatever your question about the Catholic Church, about the Catholic faith, about Catholic people, Catholic life, they are all welcome. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. I must say that on open forum days, the lines tend to fill up quickly. So if you have not dialed yet, go ahead and start dialing 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is our Director of Apologetics and Evangelization here at Catholic Answers, Tim Staples. Hi, Tim.
Hello there, Cy Kellett. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. I'm super happy to be here with you today. I don't know. I have no particular reason for that except that you're Tim Staples and it's fun to do an hour of radio with you.
It is always fun, my friend.
888-318-7884 is that number. Nathan is manning the phones. He'll be happy to take your call. If you're not a Catholic, you can call. If you are a Catholic, you can call. If you're not sure, you can call as well. Whatever the question is, it is more than welcome. Tim, I'm in looking at the news today, looking around the world, there seems to be this kind of I guess a lot of subterfuge is what I'm trying to say. And so we're not supposed to lie. And I have this question. Say that I'm a spy.
Yes.
Okay? Because that's what I'm talking about. A lot of this kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Can I lie if I'm spying for my country? You know, if I'm in a foreign country under false pretenses or something like that?
Yes, this is an age-old dispute in the church.
Oh.
You know, in this sense, you know, the Catechism of the Catholic Church in paragraph 2485 lays out what is a very solid Thomistic argument against lying. And it's rooted in human nature because of the fact that the communicative faculty is ordered toward the communication of truth. If you knowingly and willingly communicate a falsehood, you're acting contrary to the nature of the faculty itself. And
yeah.
So that is wrong. Now, not necessarily mortal, because you have to look at the nature of the lie to determine whether it's venial or mortal, but it is a lie. And we can never say that the end justifies the means. So if you have something that's objectively immoral, you can't, you know, say, well, we're going to do something immoral here because we've got this good goal
in the end.
The end doesn't justify the means. All right. So, you know, and there are the, now let's get to the controversial part because this gets kind of fun. I'm weird. I say fun, but I love theology. There is disagreement in the church over, you know, as the Catechism of the Catholic Church says shortly after, and I forget which paragraph there, 2485 and following, says that the right to the truth is not absolute. So in other words, if I'm in a situation where, you know, the classic, I have a Jew hiding in my attic,
right.
Nazis at the door. Is there a Jew in your attic? Do you have to say, sure, come on in. He's right upstairs. His name is Mordecai, you know.
Yeah, right.
No, you don't. And all involved in the discussion know that, no, you don't have to communicate that. Why? Because that Nazi does not have a right to that information. Now, the Catechism says in that case you can use discreet language, right? It never says that you can lie. Mm-hmm. It says you can use discreet language. And the debate is, what does that mean? You know, and that's where the debate begins, because for the Thomists, and I think the Catechism seems to be leaning in this direction in paragraph 2485, you would have to use discrete language in the sense of, you know, what do you mean, do I have a Jew in yeah. my...
No, which is really not going to help in
that
situation.
It's not going to help, that's yeah, right.
Right.
Whereas one Thomist... I read some time ago, said, you, what you do is close the door and run like crazy. You know? But thanks be to God, there is another option. Great thinkers like Cardinal Newman, for example, would argue that there is this tradition in our church of mental reservation, which means in that case where the person does not have a right to that information, you can say to them, no, I do not have a Jew in the attic. And that would not be a lie. So it's not, those who argue for mental reservation are not saying that we're frustrating the communicative faculty or acting contrary to it. Because of the fact that the person doesn't have a right to that information, you can say, I do not have a Jew in the attic. Now, in your mind, you're saying, for you, because you have
that's
so
you're reserving some of the statement to yourself because they don't have a right to that knowledge.
Exactly.
I got
now. There's arguments, you know, some would say, well, that's not discrete language, that's just telling a lie, and that's where the argument is. But I think Cardinal Newman makes a very good argument that the person has to have a right to that information, and the Catechism does hint at the right to the truth is not absolute. So
yeah,
that's
right.
Where it's at. I was talking with some of the guys in the office a few months ago about this, and I said, I just pray that when the day comes when whoever takes over the United States government and we're, you know,
like Red Dawn or something.
Yeah, and we're hiding in the attic. I hope a Thomas doesn't answer the door when they're looking for me.
When you're thinking about what house to go sit in, just don't go to Ed Faser's house. Well, I don't know if Ed Faser's a Thomas, but I think
yes.
Is he?
Yes, yes, he's very
yeah,
much.
So, we're just kidding, Dr. Faser, if you're listening. It's just
a
joke.
And a brilliant Thomas.
Yeah, right.
You don't
right.
want to get on the other side of an argument with him.
I see. All right, so it's it's actually an area where maybe there's not a full, final, comprehensive answer. There's right. going to have to be some prudence in these situations.
There is. And there's a general principle that's laid out in the Catechism. No, we can't lie. But there is some wiggle room as to what constitutes a lie.
I see.
Is the refusal of information a lie? And certainly not. But what? How far do you go? Again, for the Thomist, if you go to the point of communicating something that's objectively untrue, then they would say that's a lie. And in that case, you know, as I was talking to Father Hugh Barber, he said, you know what? You lie then. it would be venial at, you know,
yes,
at absolute
right.
worst. And,
right.
and so, you know, many Thomists would say that as well, that you would go ahead and lie in that situation to save the person's life. I tend to lean toward Cardinal Newman a bit on that one because I don't believe that would be a lie.
Fair enough. And there's some people, I think for me, Pope Benedict is one and Cardinal Newman is one.
Yeah.
You kind of just feel like I can trust that person. Like even if I don't fully, if I can't finally fully just absolutely come to, I trust Cardinal Newman.
Yeah. And you know, there's some interesting things in sacred scripture that lend themselves, like Jesus saying, no man knows the hour, not even the Son, but only the Father. What's going on there? Of course, Jesus knew when he was coming again because he knew all things. And we know that elsewhere in sacred scripture. Peter says to him, Lord, you know all things in John chapter 21, verses 15 through 17, for example. So what's going on there? Well, many argue that there he's using a kind of mental reservation, saying it's not for you to know. And so I don't know this for you. I'm not – why? Because they were trying to force him to become king and so forth.
Right.
And they had a completely wrong understanding of what the
right.
second coming of the Lord means. There are those who argue that. Now, of course, there's another argument that would say – when Jesus says, no man knows the hour, Pope Gregory, for example, in the 7th century, argued that he didn't know it from his human nature. it had to be revealed to him. And so in that sense, he could say, I don't know this, in the sense of it had to be revealed to him. So there are differing arguments there. But one thing is certain, he certainly doesn't reveal it to them.
Right.
Even though he knew it, he doesn't reveal it to him. And it's interesting here that if you go from that text to Acts chapter 1, where is it? Right around verse 7, he says, it is not for you to know the times and seasons which God has placed in his own authority.
Oh, yeah.
So he even indicates after the resurrection that it's not for you to know right now. When they asked him, will you restore, you know, restore the kingdom in Acts chapter 1. So Jesus himself kind of gives credence to the idea that he was actually saying it's not for you to know, not that he didn't actually have the intellectual knowledge. And isn't this fun?
It is fun. Yeah, it is fun and fascinating. Yeah, and very helpful.
Yeah.
I know that I wouldn't tell – well, I don't know. I just – there's some things that have a kind of both intellect – when the intellectual and the kind of intuitive resonate with one another, then you're
right.
And that idea, like you said, people basically know you can't say, yeah, I got a Jew in the attic. You just
or you
can't
got Tim
that.
Staples in the attic when they're coming to kill me.
That's
Si.
A different
see that?
If Valerie
he
and the kids are there.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Then, then I'll commit the venial sin. Other than that, Staples, I'm not going to purgatory for you. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with your calls for Tim Staples on Open Forum here on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hi, this is Tim Staples. Are you looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker to come and speak at your conference or parish event? We've got a whole host of Catholic Answer speakers just waiting to get on a plane and come see you. Go to CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com to get all the information you need to make your event the talk of the town. That's CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com. We look forward to seeing you.
Atheists claim theists are essentially no different than atheists because we reject gods too, such as Greek and Roman gods. But this is plain absurdity. What's our reason? First, it's an abuse of language. A theist believes in at least one god. An atheist doesn't believe in any god. They're mutually exclusive terms. To say a theist is an atheist to most gods is like saying a married man is a bachelor to most women. Second, it's bad reasoning. To say I'm an atheist because I reject some gods is like saying I'm an anarchist, one who rejects all forms of government because I reject communism and fascism, some forms of government. But that's silly. So the claim that atheists and theists are no different doesn't hold water. I'm Carlo Broussard with the Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to the faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tim Staples is our guest. Tim is the author of Behold Your Mother, a Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines, which you can get right now at shop.catholic.com for 15% off. I say that because everything there is 15% off. Books, CDs, DVDs, ebooks, tracks, MP3s, the whole deal. You just go to shop.catholic.com and you put in the promo code SPRING18, and then your purchase will ring up with 15% off. Tim? Every line full, shall we?
Hey, let's rock and roll.
William in Greenville, North Carolina, you are on with Tim Staples. William, your question.
Hey, thank you guys for taking my call.
Yes.
My question was about whether or not it's right to ask for the intercession of Old Testament saints and why I guess the great figures of the Old Testament, like Moses and Elijah and David, aren't, I guess, why don't they have saint in front of their name?
Yes.
Why aren't they considered saints?
It's a great question. Actually, they do. In fact, if you, on the Roman calendar, for example, we have Saint Elisha or Elisha. We have Saint Elijah. We do have Saint Moses. Of course, we have Saint Michael the Archangel, Saint Raphael, Saint Gabriel as well. So actually, we do have Old Testament saints on the calendar, and we acknowledge that there are Old Testament saints. That's greatly, not only do we have it on the Roman calendar or on our liturgical calendar, both East and West, but you also have, of course, the great symbols in the book of Revelation, for example, chapter 5, verse 8. You have the 24 elders who are in heaven, who many believe that 24 is significant because it's symbolic of the 12 patriarchs, 12 apostles, right? 12 plus 12 is 24, meaning all of the people of God down through the centuries in heaven interceding for us. And they're depicted as receiving the prayers coming up from the earth and taking them to God. And then, of course, you also have Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, which I think is an awesome text for this, William, where, you know, the inspired author says, seeing that we are encompassed about with such a great cloud of witnesses, let us run the race with patience set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, right? Who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of God. It's a beautiful text. But what is this cloud here? This we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Who are these?
Yeah.
Well, it's the entire chapter of Hebrews chapter 11. The inspired author had started with Abel and gone all the way through down to verse 35 to you know, 2 Maccabees, recounting the great saints of old. And he says, we're surrounded by this great cloud, which, by the way, William, is really significant because the Hebrew, you know, Anan for cloud is very significant because God dwells in the cloud. In the Old Testament, remember, God dwells in the cloud, and when the cloud comes down, it's the glory of God, the Shekinah, right? The glory of God dwells in the Anan, the cloud. And so the people are afraid and such because God alone dwells in the cloud. Well, according to the inspired author here, to the Hebrews, writing to Jewish folk, they know the significance of the cloud. But now it's not just God, but all of the Old Testament saints are in the cloud. The idea is with God. And so that's why when you read down to Hebrews 12, 18 through 24, and especially there, verse 24, where the inspired author sort of contrasts the two covenants. And by the way, William, this is a theme in all of Hebrews, is the superiority of the new covenant over the old. And that's why he starts with the angels in chapter 1, to whom the first century Jews, especially of the sect of the Pharisees, had great devotion. And he shows how Jesus is superior to the angels. And he goes down the list. He's superior to Moses. You've got into chapter 3. He's superior to Moses, superior to Aaron. And he goes down. He's superior to all the sacrifices, the temple, the offerings, everything, all the way down to there in Hebrews 10, where he begins to introduce the church. Jesus Christ, of course, and then the church as superior to the old covenant people of God. And that leads up to, you see, in especially verses 22 through 24, where he says, when we approach God now, we don't just approach God as they did in the Old Testament, but now we approach God, we approach Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, an innumerable company of angels. And then you get down to the end there in verse 24, it also says, the spirits of just men made perfect. So we are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, which includes the spirits of just men made perfect. So anyway, William, I went beyond your question there, but I wanted to give you a biblical sort of foundation of why we believe they're Old Testament saints. The inspired author of Hebrews says, hey, they're all around us. You can pray to them, and they'll cheer you on in running the race. And of course, we have the great saints on the liturgical calendar as well. Does that help, William?
Definitely. Thank you.
Okay, brother. Thanks for calling. God bless you.
Thank you very much, William. It's so wonderful to think about that. The way you describe. I mean, it's not like I don't know it, but to just think about that. Like, and I had never heard the part about the cloud before.
It's glorious.
Yeah. But it gives a whole new meaning to the phrase, welcome home.
Amen, brother.
Mary in Melbourne, Florida, listening on Divine Mercy Radio. You are up next with Tim Staples. Your question, please.
Yes, I'm a catechist in our local parish.
Yes.
And one of our last sessions, well, it was before Easter, I had a teaching on the moral teaching of the Catholic Church. So, of course, birth control was one of them. And I talked about how artificial birth control was intrinsic evil. The Catholic, you know, Catholic Church says it's wrong. We should partake in any form of artificial birth control. Mm-hmm. And that natural birth control with a rhythm method is an acceptable form of birth control. Mm-hmm. But also the fact that we should be open to be able to receive conception, if that's what happens, that to be open for that. And one of the questions, one of the people had to me goes, well, but even a natural rhythm is trying to prevent conception, just like artificial is. So I don't understand why I can't
Right.
use artificial.
Okay, here's the key. I think what we want to focus on here is contraception. That is what is intrinsically evil. We can never contracept. You're right. The regulation of births, if that's what you mean by birth control, can be morally licit. But contraception, meaning any action. Now, we talked about earlier the communicative faculty. When we look at human nature from a natural law perspective, as St. Paul does, right, in Romans 1, 28 and 29, in Romans 2, 14. From the perspective of natural law, we look at the nature of the act of procreation, and it is ordered toward, first, its primary sense is the procreation of children, propagate the species, and secondly, it is for the union of one man, one woman, or as St. Thomas Aquinas says, the mutual perfection of the spouses, right? So that is the purpose for the act. Now, if you do anything that thwarts, and this is the key to teaching this catechetically, if we do anything willfully that thwarts either one of those essential ends, that act becomes gravely disordered, right? That becomes a grave matter. All right. So, for example, if we use some, you know, in vitro fertilization that actually takes away the unitive aspect of the conjugal act, that becomes gravely disordered. You're actually trying to conceive a child, but you're not doing it the way God wills. So you're thwarting the unitive aspect that is essential to the nature of the act itself. And so that act then becomes gravely disordered. Now, on the flip side, contraception, now, whether it's the pill, whether it's a barrier method, really doesn't matter. But if we freely and willfully act against that procreative aspect of the conjugal act, that becomes gravely disordered. Now, in the case of using, natural family planning, you're not doing anything to thwart the end or the natural end of the conjugal act. You're actually respecting the conjugal act so much that you say, you know what, we, through prayer and such, believe that it's not the time for us to have children right now, and the reasons can be medical, financial, you know, very psychological problems that you determine, you know, in spiritual direction before God. You say, you know what, we're not ready. We're not going to do anything that thwarts either one of the ends of the conjugal act, because that would be immoral. What we do is we respect the act, and so we only have conjugal relations in periods of time where the wife cannot conceive. So you're not doing anything to objectively thwart the end of the conjugal act. The action that you're performing is open to God's will. You're not putting up a barrier to block, but you're saying we're open but we're going to use the natural rhythm. That's why it used to be called the rhythm method, although now we have a much more accurate ways of knowing when the wife is fertile and when she is not. So there is a radical, in fact, an essential difference between respecting the nature of the woman and only having relations during her infertile period, because that's saying, you know what, it's not God's will for us to have children at this time, but we're not going to have conjugal relations during her fertile period and then actively thwart that unitive, or I should say procreative end of the conjugal act. So there is an essential difference. Hopefully we can bring her back after the break just to be sure we're clear on this.
Okay, hang on, Mary. We'll be right back after this with more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live with Tim Staples right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I have wanted to thank you so very much. Thank God. Thank God you guys are here for us. Believe it. I just can't believe all that you've done and how you've stuck with it. Many times when I think I can't do something, I think about some of the things that you've talked about.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and you've probably heard me explain Catholicism to non-Catholic callers on the radio or engage opponents in formal public debates. I've always hoped these interactions would show people how to graciously defend and share our faith, but they're not enough. That's why I've created a weekly podcast that will help Catholics answer the toughest objections against our faith. Every episode of the Council of Trent will provide listeners with a conversation roadmap that will help them share their faith with anyone. Keep in mind that I hate boring lectures. These podcasts will contain entertaining, informative, and practical explanations of the faith, as well as interviews with the best Catholic writers and speakers in the world today. Visit TrentHornPodcast.com today to find out how you can subscribe to my new podcast. That's TrentHornPodcast.com.
The world is changing. The days of picking up a paperback book or popping a DVD or compact disc in the player have given way to the digital age. The good news is that the shop at Catholic.com has joined the digital revolution. Check out the new digital platform at shop.catholic.com, where all of our DVDs, books, and audio products are now available in digital form for you to purchase and download at your convenience, anywhere you go. For that matter, anywhere in the world. We've got hundreds of offerings, so visit shop.catholic.com today and check out our selection. That's shop.catholic.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tim Staples is our guest this hour. When we went to our break, Mary in Melbourne, Florida, listening on Divine Mercy Radio, was asking about contraception and a little more. We wanted to first check in with you, Mary, see if what Tim has said thus far strikes you as clear or muddled. Mary?
Perfect sense. Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
That makes perfect. It makes perfect sense.
Great.
To me, as far as the natural planning.
Yes.
That you are not blocking anything, that you're not putting anything to prevent conception.
Yes.
And that artificial means is blocking, is actually making that, we're.
That's right. That's why I like to use the language of contraception. Because there's nothing contraceptive about using natural family planning. You are only doing something that's completely consonant with God's will. It's not God's will to have a child now because your wife is not fertile, but that doesn't mean you can't have conjugal relations. Of course you can. You are acting in concert with God's revealed word, both revealed in Scripture and revealed by nature itself. Whereas, as you said, if you actively thwart by contraception, then you're acting contrary to God's revealed word both in sacred scripture and in nature. And by the way, if somebody is inclined to argue, here's, I'm going to give you a very blunt sort of image. Some people might get mad at me for this, but I find it a way to really help people to understand. Think about the difference between, you've got grandma who's dying in hospital of cancer or whatever, and you say, you know, she's going to die anyway, so we'll just shoot her in the head. Right? Now, I know that upsets people, but I'm using this as an example. Now, of course, immediately we know, wait a minute, that you can't do that. Of course not. Why? Because you are actively killing her. But she's going to be dead in a few hours anyway, and she's suffering, so why not? Well, the difference is this. There is an essential difference between actively killing grandma and holding her hand, praying with her until God takes her home. In one, you're not doing anything except praying for her and such and allowing God's will be done. In the other, you're actively taking a life that God alone has the authority to take. In the same way, with the conjugal act has a nature given to it by God, and we have no right. There is an enormous, in fact, an essential difference between respecting the nature of that act and allowing God's will to be done and saying, yeah, I know the nature of the act, but I'm going to thwart it because I don't want it right now.
Yeah.
That's acting contrary to God's will. Great question, though, and thanks for calling.
And thanks for hanging on, Mary, so we could make sure we were going in the right direction for you. 888-318-7884 is the number. Or for those joining us on Facebook or YouTube, if you type in a question, we'll try to get to it. Also, I got to apologize to the Facebook viewers. Yesterday, Facebook was down for us. It wasn't an in-house problem. It was a service provider problem. But sorry that we weren't with you on Facebook yesterday, but we're there today. And now this question comes from YouTube, where people use fake names on YouTube. So just so you know, this is not his real name. Convulsing Bald Man asks, why do we not adhere to the rules and laws in Leviticus anymore?
Ah, great question. And the answer is found from a New Testament perspective in Hebrews 7, verses 11 and 12. And we had, by the way, we were just talking about the book of Hebrews. Important to understand context. Hebrews is being written, let's see, to the Hebrews.
Yeah.
These are Hebrew Christians who were being tempted to go back to the old covenant law. They were essentially being taught, look, it's great you believe in Jesus and all that, but if you want to get to heaven, you got to be circumcised, you got to go to the temple, you got to offer sacrifice, and all of that stuff. And notice what the inspired author says in Hebrews 7, verses 11 and 12. He says, for if perfection came by the Levitical law, what further need was there that another should be called and arise according to the order of Melchizedek and not after the order of Aaron? And now look at verse 12. It says, for where there is a change in priesthood, there is of necessity a change of law. Hebrews 7, 11 and 12 nails it to the wall there, because he's basically saying, look, you guys are being told you need the Levitical priesthood, you need the Aaronic priesthood. And the inspired author is saying, if that's how perfection comes, why is it? And by the way, awesome here, the inspired author. You know, those inspired authors are pretty smart.
They were both inspired and inspiration.
That's right. Because he actually quotes Psalm 110, verse 4 there.
Yeah.
That prophecy, it's a messianic prophecy that the Messiah would arise after the order of Melchizedek rather than the order of Aaron. What is this Melchizedek? Well, that has significance with regard to the Eucharist, because Melchizedek, of course, offered bread and wine and so forth. You can read all about that in Hebrews chapter 7. But the point is, he says, this is a prophecy that tells you that the Messiah is going to arise after the order of Melchizedek, not Aaron. And he uses that as kind of his jumping off point, if you will, into explaining that we now have a new law, because we have a new priest, a new priesthood in Jesus Christ. And where there's a new priesthood, there is a new law. So I say all that to say this, the Levitical law is gone, according to Hebrews 7, verses 11 and 12. Now We are under the law of Christ. Go to Galatians chapter 6, verse 2. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 21. You have St. Paul explicitly saying, we are now under the law of Christ.
Convulsing Bald Man, thank you very much for that question. I'm guessing that's not your real name, but we do appreciate the question.
I would love to know what that name means, but okay.
Convulsing Bald Man. I hope it's not like a literal description, because a bald man's fine, but convulsing is uncomfortable. Connor in Nashville, Tennessee, listening on. Oh, Connor, you must be a smart man. You downloaded the Catholic Answers app onto your phone, and that's where he's listening. Connor, you're on with Tim Staples. Your question, please.
Hey.
Yes.
So I guess my question is I'm trying to understand apologetics better.
Yes.
And I've been looking at the biblical arguments for faith alone.
Yes.
And after that, I decided I wanted some of the church fathers' evidence too.
Gotcha.
But while I was online, I could find nothing for or against faith alone. So I was just asking if you could maybe cite some evidence against faith alone from church fathers.
Sure. I will do even better than that. And by the way, it is unanimous among the fathers of the church that justification is both by faith and works or obedience or good deeds. You'll find it in all sorts of documents. And I would encourage you to get a hold of Jimmy Akin's book, The Fathers Know Best. He has a whole section in there on justification by faith alone. But off the top of my head, I would encourage you to check out, and by the way, again, you can find this in St. Clement of Alexandria. You can find this in St. Ignatius of Antioch. But one of my favorites would be St. Clement of Rome in his great letter. As you may, if you've been looking at the church fathers, you know St. Clement, who was our fourth pope, he was the third successor of St. Peter as Bishop of Rome. He's writing a letter to the Corinthians, correcting some abuses that were going on there. And in paragraph 30, Pope St. Clement lays out very, very as plain as day, and I can't remember the exact words, but says that basically we are justified by deeds and not by faith alone. That's in paragraph 30 or section 30 of Clement's letter to the Corinthians. And then two chapters later, by the way, in section 32, Clement will say we're justified not by our own works, but by the faith that comes from Jesus Christ. So you know what you'll find? You'll find some Protestants who will take paragraph 32 and say, see, Clement says we're justified, you know, not by our own deeds, but by faith. And of course, he says that. So does the Catholic Church. We're not justified by works that come from us, right? We are justified or we're saved by grace through faith, and that not of ourselves, not of works, lest any man should boast, as Ephesians 2, 8, and 9 says, right? We can do nothing to merit the initial grace of salvation that we receive. And of course, St. Clement is talking about there, but in paragraph 32. But folks will take 32 out of context and not read paragraph 30, where he just said we're justified by our deeds and not by faith alone. So that's one example that comes to mind. But again, you can go to Catholic.com and check out The Fathers Know Best. You can get that online as well, but I really recommend. I mean, Jimmy hit the ball out of the park when he wrote The Fathers Know Best. That thing is packed full of examples on just about every topic you can imagine from the fathers. But at any rate, that'll get you started.
Will it, Connor? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Connor, I just had this brilliant idea. Trent always gives away books. So I think I'm just going to give you that book.
Hey, I like that.
Jimmy Akin's book, The Fathers Know Best. Can we get Connor's address and all that? Yeah, we can. Connor, hang on. Don't go anywhere. And we'll get it. We'll send you that book out. Hi, I'm as big a big shot as Trent Horn. we got to take a quick break. Actually, I was going to go to a caller, but it's not a good time to do that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Tim Staples on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
This is Bishop Robert Barron. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Today, countless people have drifted away from their faith. You know the story. Faithful parents and grandparents see their children and grandchildren drift away from the church. At first, they just stop going regularly, but they still consider themselves Christian. Then, later, they or their children stop even thinking of themselves as Christian. Eventually, some of them turn bitter and hostile to religion. This sorrowful sequence has played itself out over and over, literally millions of times. Perhaps it's even played out in your own family. The good news is that there's hope. That's why Catholic Answers is releasing a new book by apologist Matt Nelson. It's called Just Whatever, How to Help the Spiritually Indifferent Find Beliefs That Really Matter. The book is designed to help people without firm Catholic beliefs, regardless of where they're coming from. They may only identify as Christians in a kind of nebulous way. They may say that they're spiritual, but opposed to organized religion. Or they may be hostile to religion altogether. Whatever their current views, Matt's new book contains winning, persuasive means for helping them get past their current difficulties and see just how important it is to have a life-transforming encounter with God. To make your donation and get a free copy of Just Whatever, visit Catholic.com and click the Just Whatever banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Just Whatever banner at Catholic.com, or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Do you enjoy tedious lectures full of facts you'll never use? We didn't think so. That's why we're launching the Council of Trent, Trent Horn's engaging new podcast. Every week, you'll get lively lessons in Catholic teaching, as well as a new conversation roadmap that will help you share your Catholic faith with anyone, anytime, anywhere. Visit TrentHornPodcast.com now to find out how you can subscribe to this exciting new podcast.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tim Staples, our guest this hour, and it is open forum, and that means lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of calls. So well, let's go to Billy in Norwich, Connecticut. Billy, you are on with Tim Staples. Your question, please, Billy. Billy, have I got you? I don't think Billy's there. All right. Uh-huh. Well, next time, Billy. We'll check back in a minute, Billy. Well, let's go to an anonymous caller in Minnesota. Anonymous in Minnesota, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Your question.
Thanks for taking the call. First off, just wanted to let you know that it's an honor to be talking with Tim Staples. I kind of mentally freaked out when I saw that he was going to be the guest for this evening.
Well, I appreciate your kind words there. And how do I pronounce your name? Is that Anon?
It's Anon Amels.
Yes.
Okay.
No, I'm joking. Our call screener wrote Anon here for Anonymous, so that was my attempt at humor. But go ahead, Anonymous.
Okay, so my question has to do with a young man in my home parish that I am familiar with. I've gotten to work with him a couple times.
Yes.
He's from a Catholic family. Very good, as far as I know, very good Catholic family. They're very active in our parish. And he has identified as transgender.
Right.
And so this is where it gets a little bit complicated.
Sure.
One of his parents works in the parish, works with the parish.
Right.
And so when it comes to things like ministry schedules and all that, the names get, switched out. And then also...
What do you mean the names get switched out?
Like the feminine name that he's chosen.
Oh, I see.
Gets put in.
Okay, gotcha.
And also, like an elderly person I worked with has referred to him as her, and also other... several of my peers I've heard they kind of seem to have warmed up to the idea.
Right.
And it kind of seems to be a case of, Minnesota nice, as you've probably heard, you know, we're kind of non-confrontational.
Yes.
Anyway, I was wondering, And I don't know if our parish priest is taking this on. I don't know what he's doing in that area.
Yes.
But what should be the parish's response, sure. especially when it comes to, like, publications that use?
Yeah.
That, is it?
It is. That is a great question. I'm glad you asked this because we're getting this more and more at Catholic Answers. And here's the key. Of course, we welcome folks, and we understand that we are all disordered to various degrees and in various ways. We are all sinners, working out our salvation with fear and trembling, as Philippians 2:12 says. And so we must welcome all, as St. James talks about, you know, in James chapter 2, verses 1 through 9, he there is talking about wealthy and the poor, but you welcome all, and we treat everyone with the same essential treatment because we are all essentially equal, creating the image and likeness of God. And we can't overstate how important that is. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, male and female, he created them, right, in his image. All right, that's the first thing. But now, when it comes to, you know, transgender, these are tragic situations where you have people that are really struggling. Gender dysphoria can be a very serious matter, can lead to all sorts of depression and such. And so, you know, this person needs help, and we need to love them with the love of Jesus Christ and help them to understand who they are. So we need to understand as Catholics that male and female, he created them. You are either a male or a female, and we know that's a biological fact. Now, there are the extreme, you know, sorts of situations where biologically, you know, you have genuine hermaphrodites, right, that are born. But see, this is a matter of biology where you can determine, and usually even with hermaphrodites, you can determine which they are and help them to grow into who they are, except for some very rare cases where it's very severe. And so, you know, you deal with those exceptional cases. But where you have a case where a person is clearly male, it is a biological fact. We need to help them to understand who they are. But now you've got a person coming into the church who says, hey, I'm identifying as a woman, even though he is a man. What do we do? Well, what we can do is, look, if somebody changes their name legally, it doesn't matter, anonymous, you know, what somebody calls themselves, whether they're a male or a female. They can call them, hey, Pat, you know, right? Pat can be a man or a woman, but I'm joking. We could have Bob who changes his name to Alice, right? Well, I can call Bob Alice. That's just a name. But what I cannot do as a Catholic is to refer to as a he, to refer to a he as a she, because that would be lying. And it would also be disrespecting that person and his God-given gift of maleness. So that's where we have to draw the line as Catholics. We cannot pretend to be God and say, guess what, whammo, I'm going to change you from a male to a female. Doctors who are trying to do this, the arrogance of this, I mean, it's really upsetting that we're going to, you know, clip the plumbing here and turn somebody from a male to a female. No, you can't. All you're doing is disfiguring a man.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's a horrible thing to do. So at any rate, I think that's the key. What we have to do as Catholics is to stick to, you know, Genesis 1:26, male and female, he created them. I can't recreate anybody, and nor can any human being, because God's done that. God does that, and God alone does that. Does that help at all? I mean, we can draw that line, but while remaining respectful, because Cy, if somebody, you know, a man dresses like a woman, I think a pastor is within his right to take him aside and talk with him about that, because, you know, this can cause confusion in the parish and such. But I am not in favor of, you know, standing at the door and throwing them out if they're not dressed appropriately, until such time that a pastor takes the time. And really, that's the role of the pastor. That's the role of a bishop.
Yeah.
And I am not going to usurp that role.
Right.
I will cheer on the bishop, and I'm glad I'm not one of them that right. has to deal
so
with that.
Valerie.
But that really, yes, and my seven kids. But that really is the role of the shepherd
yep.
to deal with situations like that. What we have to do as Catholic laity is respect that individual person for who they are, male or female, and don't lie and disrespect them by calling them a she when they're actually he. Even if they want you to call right. them a she, they're not in reality. Does that make sense, Anonymous?
Yes, that does. Thank you.
Yeah, and I know it's a difficult situation, and I know bishops and pastors are struggling with this and yeah. such, and we should pray for them because you want to, of course, bring Jesus to these folks. And it's not that some of them don't have Jesus in their life already, absolutely. But I'm saying to bring the fullness of the gospel to them, to help them to be healed, because obviously, and this, what drives me crazy about this whole discussion is it's the actual individual suffering with gender dysphoria that's sort of kicked aside in the whole discussion.
Right.
We have real people who are suffering with a very serious problem. And just saying, oh, this is normal, doesn't help anything.
No, right.
Because it's not normal.
Right.
This is a struggle for many of these folks. And now we have a situation in California where they want to make it illegal for us to reach out to people like this and to homosexuals who are struggling with same-sex attraction and so forth,
yeah.
and make it illegal to minister to them, even if they want to be ministered to. I mean, that's how far we have fallen here. But I will tell you this, brothers and sisters, we as Catholics will not compromise the essence of the gospel for any government, you know, any president or president or governor or anybody else. We're going to proclaim the truth, male and female, he created them. Whether we're talking about folks with gender dysphoria or same-sex attraction, we're going to proclaim the truth.
Amen to that. I do think, Anand, thanks so much for that call. We appreciate it. The fact is that in most situations, however, yeah. I just want to throw this out at you.
Yeah.
There's a great ambiguity in that you don't know for certain, you have your suspicion.
Yes.
And in those situations, just be respectful.
Absolutely.
Like you just don't know, so yeah. be respectful. And also, yeah. in dealing with most people, I never call you he. Hey, he, Tim. And, yes. You know, that's when we're talking to other people. When we're talking to, it's you. And I suppose the fact yeah. that you doesn't have a gender is probably a blessing because we can just treat one another respectfully. But I really
but when you start saying she,
no, then you've crossed the line.
You yeah. have, because you're diminishing that person. And that's what we have to keep in mind here.
Right.
Male and female, he created them.
Yeah, and I wonder if you would agree with me on this too. Some of the anger around people not just going along with this
yeah.
is that because it is actually a surrendering of reality and doesn't have any intellectual support for it, you have to bludgeon people. There's
yes.
no other way to convince people
yeah.
to say a man is a woman or a woman is a man.
Well, I think we're seeing in our culture, Cy, and for all of our listeners and those of you watching, we are in serious straits as a culture. When you see the level of violence that's arising today
yeah.
against anyone who stands for traditional marriage,
right.
stands against transgenderism, and such, you're right. And I do agree with your analysis totally that there's really no intellectual foundation. And so it's almost to be expected, but to see it real time is so disturbing.
Right.
These folks who are coming with clubs and such
yeah.
after people because they're trying to speak on a campus about these issues.
Right.
This is scary stuff because, folks, we as Catholics are on the other side of this issue. And many more when it comes to the moral law. And I've got to put this plug in here. We've got an election coming up. And folks, we said this the last election, I know. But my friends, we have got to vote for sanity. We need politicians who understand that life must be protected.
Right.
From the womb to the tomb. We need
yes.
politicians who understand that God is God and we are not, because we are headed down a very dark path. When it becomes violence,
right.
Agree with me, or I'm going to bludgeon you,
yes,
this is extremely dangerous.
Right. And I have to say, I think the primaries is the time to vote, because once you get to general elections, often you have nothing but unacceptable choices in your congressional district or senator or whatnot.
Amen.
Support people who are... Yeah, basic sanity, like pregnant women have babies inside of them. That's what they're carrying, and
Amen.
Men are men and women are women. Those.
Amen.
Tim Staples, it's always a joy. Thanks very much.
Great to be with you, brother.
You can get Tim's book 15% off right now on shop.catholic.com. That's Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines. Open forum continues after the top of the hour. We'll be back with Patrick Madrid. You've heard of him, Patrick?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be back with Patrick Madrid taking your calls after this on Catholic Answers Live.